Hey, this is Robert Rochelle from D3VBWest.com here with the D3 Volleyball National Write-Up. The write-up is a day late because, quite frankly, I forgot to do it yesterday, and let me just say I really enjoyed my time forgetting it. This will be a shorter version, at least I think it's going to be a shorter version, so I apologize for that, unless you hate the longer podcast, and if that's the case, then you're welcome. As always, you can visit d3vbwest.com for articles on the national scene, although I do focus on the West region primarily. As far as upsets, which I like to go through first, didn't have as many this week. Makes sense. We're in conference play. We're not seeing the top teams play other top teams, but we did have a few, and we did have a couple in the New England region, so I'm going to talk about that in a little bit as well. So the upsets from last week, and these are going to be the ABCA rankings from last week, not the one from yesterday. I'm recording this on Wednesday. So we had number 23, Johns Hopkins, upset number 8, Juniata. And basically the Blue Jays walked into Juniata and they won in four sets. The three sets they won were 25-17, 25-14, and 25-12. The set they lost was a fun one that ended in Juniata's favor, 35-33. In that set, Johns Hopkins actually had a 23-19 lead before losing it and then losing the set. So you can see that for the most part, not a really close one, and Johns Hopkins actually had the chance for the sweep here. For the match, the Blue Jays hit 319, and really, if you look at it across the board in all the sets, Juniata just never could stop them. John Hopkins had four players with double-digit kills. It was a really impressive win, and it's one of the reasons that I moved John Hopkins up so high in my rankings this week. Next one we're going to look at, we had the unranked Otterbein upset number 12, Carnegie Mellon, in four sets. Carnegie Mellon jumped all over Otterbein in the first set, only to lose the next three. The Carnegie Mellon offense really struggled as they had only 35 kills over the four sets and were really only kept in this by their strong blocking game and their nine service aces. Otterbein had three players with double-digit kills, with Emily Shook getting 14 kills on a .444 hitting percentage. We've got a New England team next, and we're going to talk about New England as a whole in a little bit. Number 5, Johnson and Wales. They actually lost twice this week. They lost to Bowdoin, and they lost to number 24, Tufts. It was really a surprising result, as Johnson and Wales has really dominated the New England region recently. They did take the first set against Bowdoin, but they lost the next three, and then they were swept by Tufts easily later that day. Johnson and Wales hit less than 140 in both matches, and this has really been their calling card. I've made some jokes already this year about the fact that Johnson and Wales is going to lead the nation in hitting percentage, but they're struggling, and it's kind of obvious they're not getting the hitting that they're used to. And on the blocking side, they're not getting as many blocks as I'm used to them getting as well. Bowdoin was led by Sophia Paul, who had 13 kills and 18 points. Tufts was led by Bridget Bell, who had 10 kills while hitting 474. Another upset, number 18, Transylvania, was upset twice during the week, once by Mount Union and once by number 25, Muskegon. Transy, you know, they've been the hunter all year. They've been the ones creating the upsets, but it was this past week where they were the hunted. They dropped a four-set match to Mount Union, which is a team that I like, and I've moved them into the top 25 this week. Mount Union used that tried-and-true method of having a great serve and then a great blocking game to get this win. The next day, Muskegon just buried Transy, getting the sweep with the second set going 25-9. Transy would hit just under 100 for the match, while Muskegon would hit 254, and Maddie McGee would lead Muskegon with 16 kills while hitting 395. We're going to finish the upsets up with a couple more from the New England region. Number 17, Babson. They were upset by Emerson. Babson got surprised by an unranked team, and they're also a conference foe, as Emerson, they lost to Emerson in four sets. I watched a bit of this, and I'll tell you, that's a cramped court they play on at Emerson. I wasn't real sure where the heck the fans were in that one. Statistically, this was pretty even, but the Emerson blocking made a difference. Emerson was led by setter Caroline Bond with 5 kills, 45 assists, and she also had 12 digs on the night. And then the last upset we'll talk about, again out of the New England region, number 20 Wesleyan was upset by Susquehanna. This one really wasn't competitive. This was Wesleyan going into Susquehanna's gym and just getting destroyed. They were swept with the last set ending 25-16. Wesleyan would only hit 073 on the day while Susquehanna hit 234. Susquehanna would have two players with double-digit kills, with Rosina Esposito ending with 13 kills, 3 aces, 11 digs, and 1.5 blocks. Okay, this is where I usually pick a match or two and kind of look at that one more in depth, but I decided not to do it this time. I was really kind of enthralled all week by Babson getting 2 first-place votes in the ABCA this week, and then watching them that very night go out and lose to Emerson, and then seeing the other results, I thought this would be a good time to kind of form some complete thoughts on where I am with the New England region, because I've kind of ranted and raved here or there, but I really wanted to kind of consolidate things and put it out there. It was kind of understood that Johnson and Wales was going to be good, and in fact they were going to be the New England region's best team. But that's just not the case. And frankly, the way it looks right now, they may not even be in the top 3. With this region, I basically was using a few out-of-region matches plus the knowledge of how good Johnson and Wales is to judge the rest of the teams. They just didn't go out. They didn't schedule teams out of region this year. So with Johnson and Wales sliding, I kind of lose a data point that I was going to use to judge the other teams. Now, one data point that we can use is Wesleyan's loss to Susquehanna. It wasn't good, and I know it's tough to go into another person's gym and win, but if you're going to be ranked in the top 15, like a lot of voters had them to start the year, this should have been at least competitive. Now with Tufts, although you know they're sailing through their schedule, I really don't know how good they are. They've beaten some of the best teams in New England, but again, we don't really know how good those teams are. One data point I have for them is their 4-set win over Endicott. Endicott got some out-of-region action earlier in the year, so that's a good sign. We can kind of see where they are in relation to that. Another team, Babson. Babson's a problem because their schedule is just so weak so far, and in a region where getting a 600 SOS isn't that tough. Right now they sit with a 558 SOS. I don't know if it's going to really improve too much from that. But, you know, they walked into Emerson and got just totally surprised and lost in 4 sets. Now, with them, they have beaten Bowdoin, who also beat Johnson & Wales this week. But, again, we don't know how good Johnson & Wales is. So, Babson's probably pretty good. But, again, it's difficult with the data points I have to really definitively say one way or the other. Now, we're going to have a few more matches to sort this out, but with the teams in this region deciding not to play tougher teams outside the region, we're really limited in what we can learn. The AVCA voters have used this lack of information to reward the region with 4 teams currently in the top 25. But if you step back and you print out their resumes and you look at them, they simply just don't measure up to other teams. And, I mean, other teams that come November are going to be left outside the NCAA tournament because we've got 3 or 4 at-large teams coming out of New England. I have to assume the scheduling decisions by this region are due to finances, but it also seems that they use their region size and location where they can play teams from the even weaker New York region to their advantage. We know that the selection criteria doesn't weigh the quality of teams played correctly. A win against the 12th regionally ranked New England team is seen as equal to a win against Calvin, or Emory, or CMS. To a lot of the selection committee, you can see that same logic being used with the ABCA voters in a couple cases. Until the coaches and the RACs start valuing the quality of opponents, there's no reason for the New England teams to change. The ABCA poll is pretty worthless in the grand scheme of things. But it's a way for coaches to get a message across, and I'd really like to see them start using it that way. Let me leave you with this thought. Last night, Chapman beat CMS in 5 sets. I believe CMS is a top 10 team in anyone's book and a contender for the national championship. Come November, would you rather have Chapman in the tournament than a team that jacked up their resume with wins against teams in the bottom half of the regional rankings with no wins against top teams? Chapman has shown they can play at an elite level if only for one night. Is that more valuable than a team that hasn't shown anything the entire season? I think it is, but I can almost guarantee you that the 12-2 Chapman will be sitting at home come tournament time, while the New England region will be given at least 3 at-large bids and probably a second regional as was done last year. The current selection criteria allows for deeper thought than just numbers, and I hope the coaches can take the lead on making this happen. As for the AVCA voting, it just really requires a little thought. Honestly, you guys are just bizarre to me at times when it comes to that voting. Another topic I kind of wanted to touch on in this was California SB 206. On the website, I did an article on this bill, which is a bill that would allow college athletes to get compensated for their name, image, or likeness. It also prohibits schools from taking action against those student athletes that do this. The NCAA is obviously against this, as it creates all kinds of competitive problems and frankly puts the athletes who I think they've exploited on more equal footing. Well, the other day, the governor of California signed this bill into law, and now other states are looking into doing the same thing. So where does all this lead? I have no idea, but I do know that there's too much money in D1 sports for this to lead to failure like the NCAA would have us believe. It requires unique new thinking, and the sooner the NCAA gets on board, the sooner they can implement a system that is fairer to the student athletes and allows them to continue in their roles. One final thought for me on this is that I do think it's strange that sports, whether it's professional or quote-unquote amateur, seems to be the only place where everyone believes the people doing the work should be the ones that do it for a greater good. As a fan of a team, we want our players to take less money so the team can sign other players and be better. It doesn't bother us that the team values keep increasing or the money that the owners and the leagues makes. We just know that the athletes shouldn't receive it. It's just a game after all. Why should they even make any money? I mean, let the businessmen make the money, right? It's just strange. In college, it's all about the education, but sometimes the value of the education doesn't equate to what a player does for the school. In Texas, we had an example a number of years back with Robert Griffin III, RG3, at Baylor. You know, once RG3 raised the prominence of that football program, the admissions skyrocketed. And while he was there in his last year, and then every year since, Baylor's been able to charge more and more for people to come into their school because it's gained kind of a prestige that it didn't have before. As a TCU fan, I think it's funny. No one should go to Baylor. They should be paying people to go to Baylor. But that's neither here nor there. It's that name recognition that RG3 gave to Baylor. He's never been fully compensated for that. In the end, I'm really just all about fairness in all things, in all parts of life. And I guess the question is, has the NCAA treated the student athletes fairly up to this point? I really don't think so. So it's not a surprise to me to see this kind of stuff happening. All right, I'm going to kind of end with the ranking that I put out on Monday, kind of go over that. There wasn't a lot of change. The AVCA ranking came out yesterday. They didn't drop any teams. I ended up dropping 3 teams. There was 3 teams not in my rankings that I kind of wanted to get in. There was Susquehanna, who I put at 25. Mount Union, who I put at 22, and then of course I had to find a place for Tufts, and they came all the way in at number 16 on my poll. So the 3 teams that I had to drop, I had Clarkson at 25. They'd had some recent losses. They were just hanging by a thread. That was a pretty easy call, but I really struggled with the other two. I ended up bouncing St. Olaf. They were my 20th team. They'd had a loss that week. And then, you know, every time I do this, I have the resumes in front of me. I have their wins and losses for the first 5 weeks, and I looked at Johnson and Wales, and there's just no significant win at all for that team. So they've been, you know, they've been in my rankings because of who I thought they were, but they're telling me they're not who I think they are. And so I eliminated them from my rankings this week. There's plenty of opportunity for them to bounce back in, but right now, there's just nothing on the resume that, that indicates to me that anybody should be voting for them, to be quite serious. You know, looking at the top, I had Chicago, Calvin, Claremont, Mud Scripps, Emory as my top four. Obviously, CMS with that loss last night, that's definitely a hiccup. Johns Hopkins, I jumped them all the way to five from 24. They had that great match against Juniata. They had a great week the previous week. The only reason they hadn't been in my top 25 before them is because they hadn't played anybody. Again, it's not just New England. If you're not going to play somebody for 3 weeks, then, you know, you're not going to get any credit in my book. You know, Barry, Trinity, Augsburg, Whitewater, Ohio Northern round out my top 10. Carnegie Mellon took a bit of a fall. Juniata took a bit of a fall. You know, Muskegon is one that they took a loss to Ohio Northern, but, you know, they beat Transylvania. They've had a really nice season. I've got them all the way at 12 right now. Definitely a team you can't sleep on. Carthage kind of falls back, no fault of their own. They're at 14. Like I said, I've got St. Benedict. I had Tufts coming in. You know, rounding them out, it's more of the same teams. If you go to my website and you look at the top 25, you'll see the Colorado Colleges, the Eau Claire, St. Thomas, Hope. A lot of teams that are kind of intermixed based on results and who they've played. You know, the big thing on mine is that I just have the one New England team because I just don't know about the others. And hopefully we'll get some more data points and we'll go from there. But right now I've got every team on mine matches up with the AVCA except for three. You know, they've got three New England teams, where I don't. I've got Mount Union, Stevens Point, and Susquehanna. And I kind of like my three instead of their three, but they're all kind of at the back end of the ranking, so who's to say how long they're going to stay on. So we will see what happens in the week to come. I didn't really look to see, you know, where everyone's playing this week, primarily because I'm going to be out of pocket. And I'm pretty confident that I won't be doing a podcast for the next week and a half, simply because I'm not going to be lugging some of this equipment around. So, you know, if you're going to miss me, if you're going to miss these podcasts, believe me, I understand where you're coming from. But feel free just to replay this one over and over again. And, you know, I'll insert some secret jokes that come out the second and the third time you replay it. So I'll make it worth your while. But for now, I appreciate you listening at least this one time. And come over to the website, www.d3vbwest.com. And hopefully in about 2 weeks, I will be talking at you. See you later. Thanks.